We've had so many numbers thrown at us since last winter. So what is important to know about the six people who got blood clots after receiving Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines?
It's extremely unlikely. I mean, so incredibly rare that you're going to develop any symptoms of this potential complication.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan and a pile of other states are hitting pause on use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine after the company made a disclosure. Of the nearly 7 million people who've received doses of this vaccine, six women developed blood clots, and one of those six died as a result. The story has complicated the picture for a state that's trying to vaccinate its way out of the latest COVID-19 surge. Today, we're going to talk about what we know so far and how the pause on Johnson & Johnson could affect Michigan's vaccination plans. Kristen Jordan-Shamus has been reporting on the pandemic for the Detroit Free Press. Hey, Kristen.
It's great to talk to you.
Were you surprised at the news when you woke up this morning and read that the FDA was pausing Johnson & Johnson?
I sure was. I woke up and I had my alarm set to get my kids ready for school, and I always check online to see what's happening right when I wake up, and sure enough, I saw a headline that said that Johnson & Johnson vaccines were being paused, or recommended to be paused, in the U.S. The FDA and the CDC had started tweeting about it, and so I immediately stopped getting my kids ready for school and started going to work.
That moment when you know it's going to be one of those days. Looking back at the headlines, though, there were rumblings 3 weeks ago that the Biden administration didn't think Johnson & Johnson could deliver the number of doses it promised. There were problems with one of the company's suppliers. Do you think anyone in the public health infrastructure saw this coming?
You know, I think that it's probably something they've been watching for. I mean, we've seen reports of blood clots in the AstraZeneca vaccine administration happening in Canada and in Europe right now. And both of those vaccines use the same platform. It's an adenovirus recombinant vector vaccine. So they both use adenovirus. And, you know, I think it's something that they've certainly been watching for because we've seen it also in the AstraZeneca vaccine. I don't know if there's a surprise, but I do think that it's something that they were keeping their eye on.
Let's put this into context. The risk of blood clots if a person is taking birth control pills is 1 in 1,000. And we consider that a low-risk side effect when it's prescribed. But the risk for blood clots from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is 1 in 1 million. Why then do you think health officials had the reaction that they did to this?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of it has to do with wanting to be completely transparent about the safety of these vaccines. I think that there's a lot of concern that these vaccines came together very quickly, and people are worried in the U.S. and around the world about whether they're safe. And so I think this is just a step that they're taking to be completely transparent, to investigate it, and to make sure that it's okay to continue with these vaccines in the United States.
What do we know about the six women who developed these blood clots?
So we know that all six occurred in women, first of all, and they were between the ages of 18 and 48. And we also know that they developed these blood clots 6 to 13 days after vaccination. So what they're saying right now is if you recently got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and you got it within 3 weeks from today, to be watching out for these symptoms. It's extremely unlikely. I mean, so incredibly rare that you're going to develop any symptoms of this potential complication. But they're saying that doctors need to be alert for it, that people who got the vaccine need to be watching for it. That's what we know right now.
Michigan was just beginning its rollout of the Johnson & Johnson vaccination, which I feel like already had this moment in Detroit when Mayor Mike Duggan said over the winter that he didn't want this vaccine used in the city, although in the moment he backtracked on that. First of all, I wonder, have you seen any comment from Mike Duggan today? And I wonder what this is going to do for people who maybe heard that and felt some hesitancy.
I haven't seen any statements from Mike Duggan today. I will say, though, that the city is also pausing the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine following the recommendations of the federal government and the state government. So they will not continue with Johnson & Johnson until there's the all clear to use it again.
You know, I keep seeing institutions saying that they're pausing Johnson & Johnson vaccine use and they're switching to some other brands for the doses that they are giving out. Do you know if there's enough supply in Michigan of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to keep up with the demand with this change?
So for some places, they do have enough to administer Pfizer or Moderna vaccines instead for the appointments that they have already scheduled for this week. But in other places, they don't. So in Washtenaw County, for example, a couple of vaccine clinics have been canceled or postponed for this week. I know the city of Warren had a vaccine fair planned for this week, and they're also canceling it because they don't have enough of the other two types of vaccines to fill in the gap.
Kristen, I seem to remember that you yourself were a part of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine trial back in November. Do you have any concerns about your own health?
Not at all. I don't have any concerns at all about my own health. I got the shot in November, and you know, most of the people who've had problems, so these six people who've reported problems with the vaccine, all had their clots develop within 3 weeks of getting the vaccine, and I'm months out now. So I'm not really worried about that at all. And, you know, when you think about the fact that millions of people have gotten this Johnson & Johnson vaccine around the country and around the world, and we've got a report of six in the U.S. with these blood clots, it just tells you how very small and minuscule the chances are that you'll have this problem.
Can you remind us what the FDA is saying that people should keep their eye out for if they did get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine recently? What symptoms might people be aware of?
Absolutely. So what they're saying to watch for is a severe headache, you know, not just like a little bit of a headache, which is pretty common after you get a Johnson & Johnson vaccine or really any COVID vaccine. They're saying you really watch for that severe headache, for abdominal pain or leg pain or shortness of breath. I also interviewed a specialist over at the University of Michigan this morning, and he was telling me that really the window that you want to be watching for symptoms is 4 days post-vaccination to 3 weeks post-vaccination. He said that in those first, you know, 3 days after you get your shot, so if you had a shot yesterday or Sunday or, Saturday, he said, you know, you might have a headache, you might feel achy and have flu symptoms, and that's normal. But it's when you have a severe headache starting after day 4 post-vaccine, that's when you might want to ask your doctor or, you know, go to the hospital and get evaluated, because they know exactly what to look for with this now that the FDA and CDC have rung the alarm.
Have you been aware of any problem cases of Johnson & Johnson vaccines in Michigan?
No, I'm not aware of any cases in Michigan. The New York Times reported that one of the women who were affected by this lives in Nebraska, and she is hospitalized and in critical condition. And then there was one death reported as well, but I'm not aware of where that person was from.
Well, if we can just pull back and look at the bigger picture for a minute, what do you think this is going to mean for vaccination rates in Michigan? It feels like we were at this point where the state wanted to start addressing hesitancy in a pretty serious way, wanted to have people talk to their doctors about why it's important to get a vaccine dose. And I got the sense listening to the governor and to the state's chief medical executive, Dr. Joan A. Khaldun, that they didn't feel like we were there yet in terms of vaccinations. Do you think that the overall pace is going to slow down?
I hope not. I don't really know what will happen as a result of this. There is a lot of concern about that. I've heard concern from health officials, from doctors, even from some politicians who are really worried that people are going to hear about this and they're going to think that the vaccines aren't safe. The doctor that I spoke with from U of M this morning said it's extremely unlikely that this is going to be a common event that people will experience from getting a vaccine. You know, he said the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines don't have any association whatsoever with these blood clots. Right now, it's just the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And he said it's not a reason to avoid getting vaccinated because, of course, the most important health risk out there right now is COVID-19.
Knowing what you know about the sense of urgency that brought us to three novel vaccines in such a short period. Do you think that there is a chance that Johnson & Johnson's use will come back online, or is it essentially done at this point?
The FDA is saying this will be a temporary pause. They think that this will be temporary. And, you know, at a news conference this morning, both FDA and CDC leaders said that they're expecting this pause to last potentially days. This isn't going to be a long, drawn-out investigation. It will be thorough. It'll be complete. But they're saying they don't expect it to drag on or continue for a very long time. So it is likely that we will see this vaccine back in use again relatively quickly. The question is whether the CDC's committee will say, we're recommending it for men only because we've seen these blood clots in women, or we're recommending it only for older women. It's hard to say where they'll go with their recommendations after their investigation, but that's certainly something to watch for.
Kristen, you've been working on the health beat for some time now, before COVID-19 was a concern in our lives. When you hear the way that we all talk about risks posed by vaccines compared with the relative risk posed by COVID, does that feel very imbalanced to you right now?
It really does. I think, you know, the risk of getting COVID and having a severe illness from it, ending up being hospitalized or ending up dying, is far higher than having a problem with a COVID-19 vaccine. And that's what all the doctors and all the health officials out there are really saying. And that's especially true if you have a comorbidity, if you've got a chronic underlying condition, which the majority of Americans have. If you're considered overweight or obese, that's a complication that could land you in the hospital or kill you if you get COVID. If you have diabetes, if you have high blood pressure, which I think the estimate in the U.S. right now is 45% of Americans have high blood pressure, then you're going to probably have a more severe illness if you were to catch COVID. 45% of Americans, right? If you think about that, and then you think about this very tiny number of women, 6 women out of nearly 7 million who've gotten a Johnson & Johnson vaccine developed a blood clot, it kind of gives you a better perspective of just how serious this is and how we really ought to be framing it when we talk about vaccine safety.
Kristen Jordan-Shamus covers health and gender for the Detroit Free Press. Kristen, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, April.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, what researchers need to figure out about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all 3 campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
So, as you've heard, the state of Michigan is halting use of the Johnson & Johnson one-dose COVID vaccine. The FDA recommended this pause. 6 patients have developed blood clots out of the nearly 7 million Americans who received doses of the company's vaccine. So, how long is this pause going to last? And how far-reaching will it be as public health officials struggle to get COVID under control? Here with us to talk about the decisions that go into pausing a vaccine is Emily Martin, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Michigan. Emily, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
We already knew that it was a pretty big deal for the FDA to approve emergency use of a vaccine. So how big a deal is it then to put the brakes on that same product?
Well, in essence, this is the system as it's intended to work. You know, these vaccines during this rollout, we're having really unprecedented levels of monitoring, both both safety monitoring for big events like this, but then also monitoring for day-to-day side effects as people are getting vaccinated. And so, you know, as part of that kind of contract with the American public, this monitoring comes with the ability to stop and review when we see a safety event like this happen, to kind of evaluate what's behind it. Is this coincidence? Is this related to the vaccine? And that's what we're seeing happen right now.
If we look at these numbers, nearly 7 million people vaccinated with doses made by Johnson & Johnson. And out of those nearly 7 million, 6 cases of blood clots and 1 death. Do you see those as numbers that warrant a pause?
So it's exceedingly rare, as those numbers show. I think, you know, one of the reasons behind the pause, which I think is worth thinking about, is sometimes a pause gives an opportunity for, you know, as the FDA and the CDC learn more over the next couple of days, the guidance that they can issue to advise doctors and healthcare professionals and public health professionals in terms of what to watch for and how to handle a signal if we do see one of these rare events could save these events from occurring in the future. And so sometimes these pauses are great from an educational reason while they review the safety. And I think there's value in that.
What do you expect that researchers will be trying to find out about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the short term?
Usually what happens during this time period is they go deep into the data, all of the safety data they have on all of these different administrations, to see if there are other signals that might corroborate what they're seeing. They're also going to go deep into these specific cases and review laboratory data and medical data and look for any sort of connection that they might be able to draw a conclusion from. And so you're going to see this kind of sweep of abroad across all of the vaccinations, but then also this deep dive into the individual cases to try to figure out whether they're going to look to see if there's a biologic mechanism that can speak to what they're seeing. But then also, are there kind of other underlying safety signals in the data that they hadn't picked up yet that will shed any light on this?
Emily, I don't want to seem like I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think I'm hearing you say that the question at this point might not be, is this a safe product? But the question is, what signals might health professionals look for in people who receive the vaccine going forward? Am I reading that right?
That's right. Like, I think what we can expect to hear, and obviously, you know, there's more to learn and we don't want to get out ahead of the reviews as they're happening, but this is an exceedingly rare event. We know that already. And so, you know, what we can expect to hear is guidance around either adjustment of what to watch for when we're looking at adverse events, how to do it even more safely than we are already. And we also might see, you know, some of the things, strategies that we've seen in Europe and other places are kind of tweaking the guidance in terms of who gets what vaccine product to try to optimize things further. You know, I still am impressed by just the millions of people that have already received this vaccine safely.
Do you worry that this pause might have a ripple effect on the pace of vaccinations overall?
Absolutely. I think, you know, just operationally, this is a really critical time to be vaccinating. And so any sort of pauses and switches in strategy that we're seeing even this week, next week, I mean, here in Michigan, it's really important that we keep vaccinating as quickly as possible because we've got such high rates and such widespread COVID happening. In nationally, you know, you can see there's going to be probably a ripple effect just operationally from doing this. But then, you know, for communications, we're going to probably have a few weeks here where we're going to have to have that kind of careful scientific message about what we know, communicating the uncertainty, and then communicating what we learned from the review, and really getting that message out to the American public. And so you can imagine where that's going to be challenging for public health professionals.
Right. I mean, do you think that there is a simple way to communicate that kind of risk? We've been talking and talking and talking about the risks of COVID for well over a year now. This conversation that we've been having about potential risks for people who do take vaccines, I mean, do you think there is a simple and effective way to communicate those relative risks to the public?
It's really hard, you know, and my experience has been before COVID was working a lot with the influenza vaccine, which is a vaccine that doesn't have these like 70%, 90% effectiveness numbers. It's really much more variable from year to year. And what we started doing very frequently is focusing on what we called the averted burden, which is a little bit of a tongue twister, but really focusing on the number of lives that are being saved by the vaccine. And, you know, that number is already climbing higher and higher, the number of deaths that we know that have been prevented to date by the vaccine. And so, you know, that's an important message that we need to remember and not forget, that as we try to prevent these rare events and we take them seriously, we look at them, we also know that we're saving a lot of lives at the same time.
It seems like if there's a really unfortunate juxtaposition here, it's the fact that Michigan is going through such a serious surge in COVID infection rates right now. Even as this question about some of the warning signs for Johnson & Johnson vaccines are coming up at the exact same moment.
It's a huge challenge, you know, because right now with the climbing rates, it's really important to vaccinate. And so it's really a challenge to have this hiccup and interruption. I mean, it's not the most common vaccine coming into the UN or into the US, but it is still a major piece of the pie. The other thing is, you know, because this vaccine is one dose, it is really useful to use for people that might be really mobile and might not be someplace where they expect to get, you know, be around 4 weeks later in the same spot to get the same dose. And so it's been a really go-to useful tool, especially as we're looking at younger segments of the population. So I hate to use that tool, or I hate to lose access to that tool. I'd like to continue to be able to use that. And so hopefully this review will help show that it's safe to keep doing so.
Emily Martin, epidemiologist with the University of Michigan. Emily, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org for more streaming enjoyment. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by Mercedes Mejia. Our theme music is by 14KT, with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.